Broadcast Network, AfterBuzz TV, over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
I love this music.
Welcome to the Americans After Buzz After Show, Season 3, Episode 8, titled Divestment. I'm Adrienne Snow. You can follow me on Instagram and the Twitter at Miss Adrienne Snow. And here are the rest of my hosts. Go ahead and introduce yourselves.
Starting from the left. Hi, I'm Matt Ritter. Matt Ritter 1, MattRitterComedy.com.
Moving to the middle, Josh Richmond. Go to at Radio TFB on Twitter or go to joshrichmond.net.
What's up, guys? My name's Ben Bateman. You can find me on Twitter at Ben Bateman Media.
And as always, please, 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 please. What?
I was just going to give him crap about not having a website.
Look, guys, again. I decided to not reference it this week, but thanks for that.
We just had to do that. But as always, please subscribe to us on YouTube, iTunes, SoundCloud. We love to hear your feedback. We love to know what's going on in your brain. So subscribe, comment. We do read those things. We do pay attention on the Twitter.
Everything in your brain, whether it's Americans related or not, just unload to
us. You know, if you really had feels about The Flash, I had feels as well. You can go ahead and put that on the Americans After Buzz YouTube channel, and I will read it, and we can talk. I'm totally down with that.
Or The Walking Dead, because I just want to talk about that all day long.
I mean,
or Robert Durst, The Jinx.
Or Better Call Saul. You know, whatever. Pick your flavor.
To be clear, this is the Americans After Buzz After Show. So with that said, first thoughts.
I really liked how the legal systems were. As the resident lawyer on the panel, I really enjoyed the sort of discourse on what laws are and sort of systemic injustice, how that kind of played a role in different people's perspectives on how this episode played out.
It did. It did for sure. Yeah, you know, just from Paige's line, you know, just robbing banks and things is wrong. You know, breaking the law is wrong, except when governments are wrong.
Right.
And it's hard to know.
This, to me, felt like one of those episodes where there was only maybe 15 minutes of the episode that I really cared much for in terms of importance. I mean, not to say that the groundwork that you lay is unimportant. I just found myself sort of drifting. I wasn't paying as close of attention. But I am noticing more and more I think Paige is my favorite character on the show. I think, like, more and more I just have, like, if she's, like, in a scene, I'm like, oh, this is interesting. You're the ultimate wild card. You're the ultimate loose end.
It is. You have no idea what she's going to do.
It's great.
It's teenagers.
I mean, you know, you're right. We definitely revisited a bunch of storylines that have kind of been dropped in previous episodes for a while. It was a quieter episode than the last few. I don't think it was any less intense for being so quiet. If anything, I think it kind of added to it. Definitely just continuing the long, slow burn of this season.
We did light a man on fire.
Yes, I was going to say that. I was like, a man was lit on fire.
I was
going to
have one little touch. You know?
Just one little touch. I thought it was very interesting. They were planting a lot of seeds in terms of what is the law and what is right, and you can't just rob banks. I was thinking about this yesterday when I was driving. I was like, you know, I probably break the law at least once a year in ways that I never think, oh, I'm breaking the law. So
you break the law that little?
Yeah, I feel like illegal UE more of the time.
Yeah, every time I get in a car, I break the law.
Aren't legal in California? That's
I mean, some of them.
Depends if there's one of those big
unless
signs.
There's a sign that says no, you turn.
You don't ever text while driving, even a little bit. Never.
No,
never.
I said at least
at
once.
Least.
A year.
Okay. There was no
I didn't say at the most a, once a year.
You said once a year. I'm like at least once a day.
Once a week. Once a day.
Yeah, right. but every time I get on the freeway, I go above 65 at some point. I feel
see,
like.
There are so many laws that I probably don't even know about that I break. Like, you know, those crazy laws that you're just like, oh crap, this is wrong for me to do. Okay, I can't carry a lizard in Florida.
My favorites are the laws that, like, when I lived back in Santa Cruz, the city of Santa Cruz just decided, you know, we're going to make marijuana just a low priority. Police aren't going to prosecute it. So that doesn't mean it was actually legalized, but it's just like it's a law, but we don't really care that it's a law.
Well, pinball is illegal in El Monte, California.
Right.
It's an old,
you know,
outdated law.
That's kind of one of those things. That's why at the end with Paige, just the thought I had was, I see where Elizabeth is coming from because, you know, like, Paige was kind of upset because Gregory Thomas broke the law by being a drug dealer. But did she not see the preacher get arrested in front of her?
Right.
Like, the very last season. So it's kind of like, well, pick your, you know, pick your poison.
Okay, but when she says, you know, it's wrong to rob banks and stuff, it is wrong to rob banks.
I mean, it's wrong to get caught.
What we're telling you on this panel, guys, is it's okay to break the law a little. It's okay to break the law if you don't get caught. Just, we never said any of that.
We are not qualified to give legal advice, except maybe this guy.
I say break the law if you can get away with it.
Yes.
I'm a lawyer.
I work for Saul Goodman.
Yes. Oh my gosh. On that note, shall we go into the first topic of Nina and the Residentura? The return of the Residentura. It's been a minute.
So I love that Nina has like sort of embraced her role. It's like they're just like, look, you're gonna need to use your body. You're gonna need to pretty much manipulate somebody. It's just, if you want to get ahead in life, you're screwed at this point. So you better just, you know, sleep with somebody and convince them that you're their friend, and you know, we'll probably let you go. And she's like.
Well, I knew they were going to do that to her, and that kills me when they pulled that out and they're like, we give you 10 years, you know, instead of life.
Right.
It's so Kafka-esque. It's just this endless bureaucracy that she's got to navigate.
What else is she going to have to do?
That's a good term for Kafka-esque, but I do love that they're like, oh, the challenge is that he's a scientist and he's not interested in hot women. Yeah. You know, like, come on. You know, like, that was like, oh, this isn't going to be as easy this time.
He just wants
he's
to take
really
her
focused
with,
on
it's
he
not
just
like wants to she's broken computers. Down, like, FBI agents.
I know. No, not a scientist.
The very Russian government itself. Yeah, it's frustrating for Nina to see her go through that. I kind of just want her to, like, go ballistic and kill someone and just die in a blaze of glory.
She might.
Just to be like, I can't do this anymore. I don't want to be, like, Russia's, you know, national prostitute.
She's definitely compromising her ideals, it seems. And she's
she never had ideals.
Yeah, no, that's great. I
feel like she did. I just feel like we didn't meet that Nina, you know?
Maybe not.
Yeah. I also love that they're like, well, you know, you don't have to be in a cell anymore. Now you get a hotel room.
She really liked it. Touching the clothing.
Yeah.
We're going to give you a blouse. It's clean. Yeah. You can take your sweatsuit off if you want to. You know, you get to, you know, be kind of a functioning member of society. It's kind of like you get hired. ESPN's like, well, you're going to have to live in Bristol, Connecticut, like a $28,000 a year salary and like a cookie cutter apartment and be the every other weekend replacement guy on the SEC network. But you at least get to work for ESPN.
I like that analogy. The crappy level of ESPN.
But isn't that kind of like even, I'm probably misquoting this, but isn't that kind of like Stockholm Syndrome? It's kind of getting the person to turn to your side.
Right,
like,
right.
Hey, this was horrible, wasn't it? You had no windows. We've had you slop. Now you have like a nice little tea kettle and some of your things back and a window. Isn't this so much better?
Oh, I mean, they're totally playing little psychological games with her, and it's working.
Your blouse doesn't smell. It's clean. Well, we washed your blouse.
And I mean, we could talk about Stockholm Syndrome more when we get to Martha, too.
Yeah.
Because it's for sure in play there. But
That was the best part of the episode, just hands down. One of the most tragic things. But
Nina really has become one of the most tragic characters on the show, and you can still see that little bit of hope in her eyes when they say, if you do what we say this time, we'll give you your freedom. Like, the FBI didn't feed her exactly the same line
of bull.
Exactly,
you know? And she still ended up back in Russia.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
She's going to be there with one day left on her sentence, like, getting ready to go. She's got her jacket on, and going to be like,
One more thing!
Just one little task. Need to plant a bomb inside the Pentagon.
Yeah, man. That's how they get you. It's kind of like even what I feel like, and we'll touch on this later, what Gabriel's doing to Philip in a way. Of kind of like, I have this on you and I'm going to hold this over you to make sure that you don't fall out of line. And once you've done exactly what I need you to do, then I can probably find something else to use. It's just mind games, and it's horrible and sad. And I wish Nina would just be like, I just don't want to keep doing this. I wish she would get that it's never going to stop. It's just never going to stop, you know?
They're setting her up as a character. I think it's interesting what you said, a blaze of glory. They're setting her up as a character that can die tragically in like a way where she's been dangled, like sort of as a carrot thrust as a character for a long time. Mm-hmm. She hasn't really been relevant to the story for a long time. She's just sort of been there. And I feel like we're comfortable enough with her. It's the sort of character that you can sacrifice as a writer, knowing that you're going to make an impact, but you're not going to lose too much.
We probably need... Right. Yeah. Like you're saying, like, we probably are, like, you know, as a show, right, we probably need somebody to go at the end of the season, just for propelling a different story forward
so
next
Nina
year.
Or Martha.
Seems like it's going to be Martha.
It's like a next celebrity pool.
Let's start a pool.
We could. We really could.
Let's start a pool with our listeners. Is it legal? I don't know.
On the other hand, my read on what they've been doing with Nina this season, because she's been mostly out of play, I feel like they're trying to figure out how they can get her back to America and back to, you know, kind of messing with Stan and Oleg and that whole love triangle.
I would hope not. it's just kind of done.
But wouldn't it be ironic, you know, now that Stan is finally kind of getting over this whole thing and maybe moving, maybe his personal life will finally start to improve and then Nina shows up again.
Comes back.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows?
I tell you what, if they do with Nina what they did with Neve Campbell at the end of Wild Things, then that will be the best ending to Nina's storyline. You guys haven't seen Wild Things.
I've only seen one scene from Wild
Things. I remember the pool scene.
Guess which one.
Spoilers.
Yes.
Spoilers.
Exactly.
I'm saying spoilers.
Don't you see Kevin Bacon's butt in that movie?
You see all of Kevin Bacon in that movie. No, at the end of Wild Things, I'm spoiling it, but if you haven't seen it, it's up. Been out for 20
it's
years.
It's a classic.
I mean, and you don't really need to see it.
There's four things you need to see in that movie. What?
You haven't seen that.
They're all Kevin Bacon's butt. What?
No, so it turns out that, you know, they're playing, it's a scheme to get money out of somebody, I forget who. But they end up getting the money. Denise Richards dies. And supposedly, before she dies, she murders Neve Campbell with good old boy, what's his name?
Kevin Bacon? Matt Dillon.
So, it turns out that's not at all true. So, they killed Denise Richards. Neve Campbell's alive. She and Matt Dillon go off on this yacht. Turns out that Neve Campbell is not like some bumpkin idiot. She has like 200 IQ, and she has really been the mastermind behind everything. She kills Matt Dillon, throws him off the boat, and takes off into the sunset on this yacht.
So that's what you want for Nina.
Yeah, because
you want her
in
to kill Stan at the end somehow?
Well, to just get away with it. Because, you know, the whole point is, like, Neve Campbell's character is that she's just trash.
Right.
And that nobody respects her and everyone treats her like crap and everyone just abuses her. And the whole time that all this is happening to her, she's kind of plotting her freedom and her way out and away from these
people. I could see, like, if this goes six seasons, she's just walking in Mexico in Zihuatanejo, Tim Robbins.
Yes.
Like, she'll be like the last man standing.
Oh,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
I see
what you're saying character-wise, though.
And I could see Nina, because you guys predicted Nina's death. To me, Nina is the consummate survivor. Maybe
she's
a better
low-hanging fruit to kill. So
she
maybe
is.
I know, I almost mean like she's better at just figuring out how to survive than anybody else on the show. She's not always in the best circumstances. She's always going to be used by the people around her, but she's going
to
make it.
So just to be clear, you have Dubroni on Martha in the death pool.
It certainly seems that way.
Yeah. I don't know. Or maybe Paige.
Hey!
Whoa! Jinx!
that seems almost too
only
crazy.
Only the good die young.
Yeah.
That would be good, though. Well, I've been kind of rooting for Paige. I don't really like Paige's character that much.
I'm more with Ben than with you. I really like... Every time Paige is on screen for some reason, I feel like it's moving somewhere
she's
interesting.
She's growing on people.
Yeah.
She still hasn't...
I'm always so curious what's going to happen.
I'm not on the hooked on page yet.
I'm not hooked there. Okay. I'm not there. So before we move on, Oleg and the Resident Era, it's very quick. It's just kind of like...
Yeah.
I feel like just giving the character something to do.
Just keeping him in the fold.
Yeah. So maybe
there's
they're just
probably,
planting a seed
there. They just didn't give us enough to go, oh, I know where they're going with this, unless you guys saw something I didn't.
Mm-mm. It's another reason I think Nina's not going to die, is because I feel like Oleg's only an interesting character in relation to Nina.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's one reason, like, they might be
maybe
keeping him around.
Maybe that's the third thing. Maybe after she gets a scientist, then they're like, and before you go.
One more thing.
Could we use you to get Oleg to come back? Yeah, so that was an interesting storyline. I'm curious as to what they're going to do with the whole Russia aspect. And
I did like that line, though. It was a good little zinger about, when am I going to not ride the trains in Russia? I'm not really too worried. Like, I think I have a Mercedes Benz in Russia. I'm
He's
good.
Just like, I don't care about your father. He's going to die.
I like the Resident Tour director. I also like that they brought back the old Resident Tour director who Nita completely screwed over back in season one. I'm like, wow, that's an interesting situation that this guy is now back in control of her because
he's
not going to fall for anything she's going to do at this point.
One of the things that I'm beginning to notice about this that I'm finding really charming about this show is that, so like this morning, this is slightly related. I watched Air Force One for another reason. And there's obviously the Russians and the whole deal with the Russian presidency and all that. There's a huge amount of these action movies from the 80s and 90s that reference Russian, everybody from terrorists to...
Russian MiG planes.
They still do it now, even now that the Cold War is over. They still always turn to Russian mobsters in action movies.
There was that moment where they tried to do North Korea, and then they're like, so they went back to Russia.
They won't do China because China's too big of a market for films, so it's got to be
Russia. Russians work. They work.
So what's hilarious about it is... all those things that were made in the 80s and 90s were reflections of the actual Cold War that was happening. And even a movie like Air Force One, which came out in 1997, it's still not that many years past the Cold War, where it's still very much like in the American consciousness that they identify with that. Now, this is a show that's being made now, way past the Cold War, about it accurately back then. So this is just like we talked about last week. All the stereotypes about the FBI, about people in the army, how this stuff works. You have to really ask yourself, how many of those stereotypes about Russian characters and Russian military and Russian government do we have from these action movies from the 80s and 90s? Because it was such a prominent part of it. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I mean? I'm asking myself this question where I'm watching Air Force One. I'm like, I wonder if it's more like the Americans or if it's more like this douchebag with the blonde hair who's you're smoking a cigarette. And it's they all smoke cigarettes. I don't know. It's just...
Well, if we go by actual news with... Putin.
Right, sure.
Oh, God, am I getting in trouble for this?
Vlad Putin.
Vlad Putin. Then it is kind of... I mean, for every stereotype, there's a little truth. See pictures of Putin riding a horseback, bare-chested, and I think people being assassinated.
Somewhere in the middle, his rival just got assassinated on... They captured it on camera. I don't know if anyone saw that. That was really creepy. They had a camera over a bridge. It happened on a bridge. And so you see a truck pull up, and there's a guy with his wife, the other political dissident, walking with his wife. All of a sudden, the truck is blocking their view, and then there's only one person left. And the other person's just gone.
Creepy.
All you can see is shadows. But that Russia? I don't know.
Putin totally plays the Cold War era stereotypes up. It's kind of like George Bush pretending to be a cowboy. It's Putin pretending to be macho Russian man.
I remember watching some French film where at one point they did their impression of the U.S. and it was buongiorno or bonjour, je suis American. And it's this... cartoon of Bush. And I'm sure people would be like, that is nothing like what George W. is. But then when you
there's
go
a little bit, there's
and
some
you
truth
watch,
there.
An interview with him, you go,
And even better, you watch Will Ferrell just being George Bush in anything, and it's even better.
So there is some truth in those stereotypes.
I wonder if we have any Russian listeners. I would love to hear your thoughts on
I'd be really
any
curious.
Of these portrayals or just of Russian society versus what's portrayed on
in the
any,
show.
Any,
yeah.
On this show versus other movies, you're talking about 80s movies.
I read a Russian talking about the Americans just commenting on the Russian language scenes and saying that the translations are actually pretty good. Yeah. Because all the scenes are written in English and they have to be translated to Russian.
Yeah.
And apparently they do a good job with it.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see, and just kind of what their viewpoint, if they were alive during the Cold War and they were able to understand what was going on, what was their viewpoint of it from that side? If they how they interpreted it or how they saw it, or if they lived in Russia at the time and now they live in America. It's just really interesting to see what different cultures how different cultures view big moments in history,
right?
And what their history really is of that, because our history is so different from.
They
Russian
say history is written by the victors.
Yeah, they sure do.
And
that's what they say,
that's sort of in a weird way, history is written by, at least through the media, by Americans, because we've had such a dominant, strong stranglehold on ever since the beginning of television and film. To the point where other countries have had to mandate internal quotas on in-house productions, of French-made or Canadian-made productions, because it plays a crucial role in how you're portrayed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
History of your culture and all that, the way they absorb that.
Yeah.
So, do you have one more?
No, I'm good on I'm good on Oleg.
Cool. Let's move on to Venter. Who got set on fire.
Pretty gruesome.
Does the tire...
what was the point of the tire?
Does it make it... Because I would have thought it makes it burn faster and hotter. But doesn't that make you die less painfully?
because it's faster and hotter.
Right. Mm.
Is there a less painful way to die, I think, by sedum?
Maybe actually, it's just yes, in that movie Last of the Mohicans when he shoots him right. as he's being burned alive. That's the best way to die on fire, when somebody shoots you.
Well, yeah.
I thought maybe it was to make sure he stayed restrained, maybe because the ropes were going to burn. I don't know. Yeah, but it could, would kind of be unnecessary once he was already on fire.
I guess it is to kind of insulate the heat and to... Maybe to slow it down?
That's what I was wondering.
Slows it down because it insulates the heat in that area.
I was also thinking it'd be incredibly uncomfortable and claustrophobic to have yourself wrapped in a heavy rubber item while you're burning alive, to not be able to move, and you're just forced. It's, you know.
Not enjoyable.
I will say, there was a moment when I was watching that, and I was like, dang, Adrian, you have some darkness. Because I went, well... He's a racist. And I was like, Adrian.
No, but it's funny.
He's not just a racist. He's perpetuating apartheid. Yeah. You know, it's a whole different level.
It's not just that he's a racist, but it's like he is vehemently adamant about the murder of blacks in South Africa.
It's a different thing.
So, I mean, it's in addition to that,
how interesting
racist.
That they contrasted that scene. They cut between that and, Aderholt being interviewed back at FBI and being kind of asked, do you feel like you have any resentment because you're new?
Yeah.
And I felt like there were definitely some implications there.
Race was definitely a through line in this episode, and I was thinking to myself that whole thing about laws too. It's weird that it sort of parallels in some ways. You know, a lot of the things that are going on in the U.S. now. It's sort of this. Mm. You know, like we talk about what's legal and what's not. Well, if a system is set up against a certain group, then what do you do? You know, and in the South African example. He Nkobo actually turned the tables when he killed him. I thought it was very interesting that he actually sentenced him to death. Mm-hmm. He took the power of the legal system and said, "No, this is our legal system. This
That's
is
really
our
point.
Justice, because it is written by whoever it's written by. It is written in their favor, and if it's not written in your favor, you have to ask yourself, well, what is the purpose of following a law that is?"
It's an interesting time, in case listeners don't know, and I hope people aren't like, oh, God, what? I'm black.
there's
podcast listeners. And so it's a very interesting time, at least for my own personal adulthood, of being a black woman, in terms of you can feel it. Like, you can feel like there's this... energy happening where there's a lot of anger, but then there's a lot of people who are just like taking the anger and surfing on it and being like, we're going to change stuff and in a much more productive way than our parents. Not to say that our parents weren't productive, because they were hella productive. But it's more of like this, okay, so yeah, there's this anger and there's frustration, but you don't want to go into it. You want to like surface out of it. And then also you see that everyone is kind of reacting to it. And what's interesting is that one of the lead writers on The Americans is Tracy Scott Wilson, who is a well-known black playwright. So you can kind of see like there's like little seedlings of race coming into the dialogue of The Americans, because it's reflecting what's going on with society. Like even with Jay Smooth, yesterday with CNN.
I saw that.
It's
weird.
Not just like an us versus them type of thing. It's everyone kind of having to address their own dealings with racism, or within the community and out of the community. Like, to turn to a black man and say, "Well, you're adopting black."
Right.
Type of personality.
Not realizing that he's a black man.
So.
Well, this is a very interesting moment right now. I think this is definitely a very socially progressive wave that is kind of happening in the country, partly fueled by social media and the rise of the internet and the fact that so many people who maybe didn't have a voice now have a much stronger voice than they did.
Well, it's because every video can be a Rodney King video now.
Right.
Like, there is
right.
no... It's not spectacular when something happens on video anymore. It's like, no, if you do this... It will go on video.
Right.
And people will know, and they
will call you out. But it's in comparison to, I think 1983 was a very not progressive moment.
Yeah.
It's the Reagan administration.
It's a very different time.
Yeah.
It is really interesting what you guys say about, like, if you do something, it'll be on video. It's like, there was all these complaints, I think it was 2 weeks ago with the Ohio State stuff, right? And all this, there was I think it's Ohio State, is that Oklahoma?
Oklahoma.
Yeah. And it's just funny that, like, there's, there's protests and people getting up and down about it. It's like, guys, if you're racist and you do something racist, especially around any kind of prominent sports or athletic or academic program, it's going to be on video. The whole country is going to know about it. It's completely unacceptable. There's no chance you're going to get any sympathy or get away with it.
It is crazy. My main reaction to that video was, how dumb are you?
It almost feels like we're in a time now where it's just it's always been unacceptable, but socially, there's no corner to hide in. You just can't. Mm-hmm. You can't expect.
And I think that sort of, I think the Donald Sterling thing was interesting, how people came down on different sides, you know, legally, like, oh, well, his privacy was invaded, what you say in your own home. And I think it does reflect a point about our generation of this idea of, you know, saying things behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. And maybe not being able to say things behind closed doors, that maybe in some way eradicates those, like, thoughts and those, you know what I mean? Maybe you're like, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't even be having these thoughts and feeling this way, you know? I think there's something interesting about it.
Well, I think that's a really difficult thing to ask of people.
Yeah.
I can't sit here and say that I don't say horribly offensive things on occasion. Like, yeah. I mean, about other races, about men, about my own race, about women. It's not something that it's... I don't do it out of the intention of hurting anyone. No. But it is kind of... there is a certain level of... Well, I understand that what people are doing is wrong. Like, that is racist and that is wrong. But it's also kind of... We're starting to ask maybe a little too much of people in terms of constantly living in a state of political correctness. It's not fair to ask that of everyone. And I'm not saying that I agree with, like, the guys in Oklahoma or with Ron Sterling or even with Paula Deen.
No.
But it's also kind of knowing about the history of things. Like, I was talking about Paula Deen earlier. I was like, am I really that surprised that an old white lady from Georgia used the N-word?
Right, of course not.
I'm from Texas and Georgia. I'm not surprised at all. I've seen much more horrific things just walking down the street.
There is sometimes a lot of false outcry over nothing, but there's also sometimes, you know, outcry over legitimate things.
It is entirely valid.
There wouldn't have been the whole outcry over the whole Bill Cosby thing that snowballed the way it did without, starting with that Hannibal Buress routine
and
the way it just gathered steam.
It's going to be, it's a difficult thing to go into, to have change, and there are things that are being asked of, like, the human race that is trying to eradicate things that go back generations upon just the beginning of humanity in terms of how we document things and how we categorize things. So I think sometimes it's like, pick your battles. Like, not everyone is newsworthy.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. And bringing it back to the Americans, what I think is interesting about, you know, the time period that they're in and talking about those systemic sort of inequalities, you know, when she's trying to explain to Paige about those laws, you know, and it is a very different time. Like, that was when all of those really harsh drug laws were enacted. You know, they're like, you're arrested for being a drug dealer and all that stuff. Like, there was a total... It was just a completely different time in terms of the legal system. And it was, you know, Rockefeller laws and all those sorts of things that, you know, set off on a totally different chart for our country, racially speaking, too,
and even with,
after the civil rights movement.
Even with Gregory Thomas, it is kind of that situation of, like, well, he probably was a drug dealer. That is correct. But how many times did, you know, he get raided and maybe he didn't really have that drug or he didn't have that much? Or so it's kind of like, well, there's still that racial tension of, because you are black in 1980s America, we're going to come down a little bit harder on you. And we might even make sure that we can come down harder on you by planting evidence to do so.
Right.
Which I think was just an interesting parallel with Nkobo saying, I'm claiming this law as mine. My law says you're going to be lit on fire right now.
What did we think about them letting the... Todd watch? Letting Todd...
Oh, God, I'm so worried that's going to backfire badly.
Oh, letting Todd go or letting Todd watch?
Letting Todd go.
Oh. It's totally going to backfire.
I was shocked that Liz... Of all people.
There's a rare moment of sympathy. You guys notice she has this way of talking. I was thinking about this. Like, there's this reluctance she has when she's in a situation where she's talking to, like, a hostage or, like, anybody where she's sort of in disguise. And it's like they ask her a question and she, like, she furrows her brow. She kind of hesitates for a second. And then she answers in this really serious way. And then she goes back to their interrogation. And it's like, it's this weird almost like, I feel like she has to prepare herself to be in that state of, like disguise or like that, you know, that false sort of reality she lives in. Almost has to center her thoughts every time. Because it's not like that when she talks to Philip. It's only when she's in disguise.
It might be a tic. It might be one of her just tics.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting.
Like, or maybe, you know, you're talking about like when she's interacting with Todd.
Yeah.
I mean, it may be also a tactic to ease him. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like a communication, like
yeah,
a
total,
non-verbal.
You know, good, there's a good cop, bad cop thing going on.
Like
her
not even a verbal thing, because it is like, you know, I knew he was going to crack with her. For, you know, like he knew he was going to crack. And it's like, why?
Well, after seeing Venter set on fire. Well, yes. And then her being, you know, after seeing that, I feel like he would kind of go, oh, are you going to do that to me? Yeah. And so for her to come in and be like, no, obviously we're not going to do that to you. Yeah. We just put a bullet in your head. Yeah. It's kind of like, we're being nice, but
not
we
that, not
still.
That nice.
It's like this motherly disapproval she has. Yeah. She does it with Hans too. It's where it's like she's not being entirely honest. She's judging you, and she wants you to know it. I think that's just really interesting. I started to notice tonight, but anyway.
I wonder if she's being extra sympathetic because she's got Philip's son on her mind.
Yeah,
maybe. I mean, I feel like there is another level to all of a sudden her being the one to go, you know, let's give him a pass right now.
Yeah.
It is definitely going to backfire, though. I mean, I feel like he did see Hans, and I feel like that's how he's going to get back at them.
Oh, yeah,
because
that's a good point.
I don't think Todd is as innocent as they make him
off. I think Nikobo's line was there for a reason, too, when he said, you don't know these people. Like, they don't know that struggle the same way they know their struggle.
Yeah.
You know, the U.S.-American struggle. This isn't their struggle. So they don't know the psychology as well as he does.
And they should know as easily as they lie that he can lie just as well to break down into tears and to cry and, you know, and to tell partial truths to gain your freedom. You know, I'd be like, I have a bomb. And
Last episode, Elizabeth just shot a woman in the head who was like barely, she had not talked to for even a second. Who was
it's
working
a little
with the South
character
Africans.
Inconsistent.
Yeah, it's a little bit inconsistent.
Unless they're going to explain it next week.
I think what you said is that she has the Philip's son, and it's like a younger, it's a younger male. I don't know, maybe. But
so shall we go ahead into Paige and Gabriel then, just going off with the
whole Yeah, let's talk about that.
Paige, the best character in the show. But here's my reason that
I'm on your team. I'm on your team with that. I think so too.
This is the reason I like Paige so much. I started to notice this. It was this season. They started dressing her like a little older and making her. It was like as they were developing her into like a little bit more of a cognizant character. And I feel like any time that she's on screen now, you're basically like you are the ultimate loose end. Like you, in some way, like you're uncontrollable. This story can take a radical turn with anything you decide to do because it feels like you could get snoopy and you could probably figure something out that they don't want you to find out. If they did tell you, who knows how you'd react?
I agree with you. I think you're making very valid points.
She's not as snoopy
about,
as she used to be, though.
About the danger of her essence right now.
She's like the ultimate decision tree. Like, at any point in time, this show could take a radical turn based on any decision she makes.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, you could say that about any character, but I just like how unpredictable her scenes are.
She definitely seems unpredictable here, but I also wonder how much of it is Elizabeth's manipulation. You know, she told her about Gregory. She did that for a reason.
Yeah.
I wonder if she knew Paige was going to go exploring and looking
for
more details.
She knew Paige was inquisitive. I didn't know she would end up on a little microfiche slide.
No, me neither.
The appearance
I haven't seen one of those in a long time.
I have not. That was very tedious before the internet.
Yeah. But I could see, like, maybe if you want Paige to know the truth, maybe the best way to have her find the truth is to have her kind of discover it on her own, or at least a piece of it.
That's a good way to gain her trust as well.
Yeah.
You're planting little seeds. Like, she gave her, like, a little breadcrumb, and then you find
exactly.
the rest of the
trail. Slowly walking into it. Yeah. Today, Paige learned that, you know, Gregory, and by extension, her parents who worked with Gregory, probably legitimately did, you know, criminal things and things that she just doesn't want to know about.
Yeah. Do we...
Essentially.
What about... So we have the Paige stuff, but there was no discussion in this episode whatsoever between Elizabeth and Philip about like her being an agent and all that stuff.
I think they kind of let that go for next, this episode. Yeah,
They were a little distracted with other things.
Did you guys find it interesting that so you mentioned this already that Elizabeth went to bat. She talks to Gabriel about find Philip's son.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting that she went to bat on that issue, but not on her daughter not being a spy. right?
Well, it's about her mindset, about how she still thinks that that's the right thing to do, you know.
And also not about the Kimmy thing, which she's clearly, you know, conflicted about.
Because you thought that's what she was going to ask about,
right? I have to say, also, if we're talking about slightly character inconsistent, she knows Gabriel well. I mean, she should know that here's the chess game. He can't give up, you know, the son out there. That's a chip.
Well, I think
the son is the chip.
Dead.
But that's the chip. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So for her to even ask that doesn't really... Knowing her, it doesn't make sense. She would already know that he's the chip.
Yeah.
You know?
I could see that. I think also, though, you know, we're starting to notice that Elizabeth's thinking a little bit more with her heart.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so that's kind of playing on that as well, that she didn't ask about things that would really benefit her. She asked about things that would benefit Philip. But with that said, the reaction that Gabriel had to it, when he said that there's, you know, he'll see what he can do or something, or there's, you know, I got the sense that the son was already dead. I was just like, oh.
Mm.
And it never even occurred to me that they would just use this knowing that the son died.
What if there was never a son? What if it was
a whole setup?
And what if it's been
time?
Like a setup from the very beginning?
That wouldn't be too surprising.
Yeah.
I just love that we get Frank Langella, even if it's for a minute in an episode.
It's a pretty cool actor.
He's so cool.
It just instantly makes, you know, the role of their handler so formidable. Just because every scene he's in is just, he has so much gravitas.
He does.
Yeah. I wonder if Frank Langella, because I know a lot of, like, the main characters that are in every episode are all in New York. I wonder if Langella's in New York or he's in L.A. Because if he's in L.A., we should reach out to him. He'd be a really interesting guy to try to get on the show.
Yes.
Why are you talking about him like he's not listening to the show right now? I assume he listens every week.
Amazing to talk to him.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be cool.
Yeah, he'd be a great guest.
Tweet at us, Frank.
Yeah. I hope you have a Twitter. I'm going to look you
up. Please don't have a Twitter, Frank Langella. Please don't.
Just the idea of Frank Langella.
I kind of wanted to imagine, like, he's never used the internet. He writes everything longhand.
I agree. He has never... I think he's never used the internet.
He uses the internet.
I want, like, Frank Langella to do, like, a mean tweets like Jimmy Kimmel thing.
He's going to do this. He's going to be like, these guys were saying...
He's got such a majestic voice, you know? Like,
I'm sure he knows how to use the internet. If you don't know how to use the internet... Or have someone in your life who knows how to use it.
Then you're a racist. And I, what?
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 I don't know.
Yes, that's, no, never. I did not say that. Ben Bateman said that. Okay.
Ill-timed joke.
Okay.
On that note, shall we move on to Martha and Taffet?
You mentioned Jefferson Mays as Walter Taffet, who you recognized last episode, and I didn't know who he was, but now I know who he is. This guy is very
kudos
intense.
Kudos to Adrian on that.
Yeah, great actor.
Jefferson Mays.
Great character.
I saw him perform a play randomly at the Lincoln Center that my friend was in, and was like, well, this guy is amazing. And he's kind of a big deal. Years ago.
My favorite moment of his this episode was he was talking to Martha about, do you maintain his pen collection?
Maintain.
Keep them working full of ink?
Yeah.
He just pronounced that ink so hard.
He's got a good character. Yeah, he's like, I love the way he was just sort of like messing with Adderholt. He's like, get you coffee, and he's like holding the mug. And he's like telling Gabe, this is good coffee.
He's doing a lot of mind games, and he's... Yeah. His intention behind everything is just so, like, it's clear that what he's saying is hiding the real meaning.
Right.
But you know, like, even with the whole being new, just that, you know.
Right.
Just the title, The Office of Professional Responsibility. Mm-hmm. Literally, it sounds like something out of, like, 1984. It sounds like something that would have been in Soviet Russia. Like, it's such a euphemism for something sinister.
I love that it's not just IA, like in cop movies.
Right.
It's always just, we're getting investigated by IA. But, like, I also love that the way he asks questions and then responds to the answers given to him are, like, when he asks Gad. And he's like, what's he say? He's like, So you're not ruling out the possibility that my professional negligence led to an leap to the KGB? And he's like, I'm not prepared to admit that yet. It's just great that, like, that's the kind of response.
Yeah, he's just like, have a good
I'm time. Not saying you are negligent.
Because guilty people act guilty, and he knows that. So if you give somebody reason to doubt or suspect, right, that's sure that's behind it.
And then Gad just kicking the shit out of that male robot. Like, he tapping this in his head.
He made him lose it.
Yeah.
He made him lose it.
I love the male robot.
that's his job, is to get under people's skin, because when you get under people's skin, that's when they break.
Made Martha slip for a second there.
Yeah.
You know, she was
held it really strong.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. But I mean, for a minute, she's standing by the files.
Yeah.
You know, and just like, she's obviously thinking about the interrogation that just happened.
Right.
Let's tack, because I think we're going to run out of time if we don't get to it. I really want to talk about Martha.
We're on the last topic, actually. Yeah. So, Martha.
It was so sad.
I wrote dead for a second on my pad. Dead? Question mark?
Yeah.
I thought I was like, for a minute there.
Like, the clock was just going to kill her?
I thought right there. It might just happen. Just a shock and awe.
Clark, when he introduced himself to Martha, he said he was part of the CIA. Is that correct?
I think so.
I thought he said he worked for like intelligence for some other country. Russia. But. Okay,
they opened their relationship in the pilot, knowing each other. So he shows up in the pilot, and they're familiar with each other.
But they kind of reference he references like what he does, and I guess
like it might be crazy, but I thought he said like he's with Swedish intelligence or something like that.
Said that he is like the. He works with Swedish intelligence, but he's an American working with him, or something like that. But I know at one point he did say something along the lines of, like when he gave her the pen is, you know, I just need to be sure that everything in the FBI is going accordingly.
Yeah.
And so it took me a second to click when she asked him, do you know who Taffet is? And he goes, no, who's Taffet? And she goes, well, he's you. And that's when I was kind of like, oh, wait. What did he tell Martha to get her to do that? And so it is kind of, I guess he was supposed to
And wouldn't, that. And don't you think Philip would know Taffet or would know who Walter Taffet is if this is what he does?
Yeah.
That was kind of a big giveaway right there.
Yeah. It was a really sad scene. I mean, just obviously friend of the podcast, Allison Wright, I was like just blown away. I just was...
Killed it in that scene. That was so heartbreaking.
Mm. Yeah, really just, like she's, the last few episodes, I really loved her performances. I think she's done such a great job and... it was just so when she wants him to answer it in a way that absolves her curiosity so much.
Well, I mean, it's that question was her life or death hanging in the balance too. I mean, really, it was. That's how close.
Of course, she's terrified. She really does know nothing about Clark.
Yeah.
And when Clark didn't give her anything else besides "I love you" and "you need to trust me," and she just
that's
broke
like
and said, "Okay,
death. Okay." That was when a woman hears that, she's like, "Oh,
yeah."
And if you notice, she slept on her back, facing away from him.
Yep.
Yeah,
which is a bad move for her. If she's trying not to get killed.
But I don't think she thinks she's in danger.
She probably doesn't think he's capable of that.
She doesn't think he's capable of that.
I know.
But it's... I feel like in that moment, it must be overwhelming and heartbreaking to realize that this man you've let into your life for the past, 2 years, is not all who you thought he was.
Mm-hmm.
That you've been incredibly naive and you didn't really know that much about him to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And that you just trusted him blindly because of the very thing he used to reel her back in. You should just know that I'm your husband and I love you and everything I've done is to protect you. That should never be enough.
No, it was so
which is why you say it's so sad. It is.
She's been pushing back on him so much this season, and so to see her actually break in that moment and just accept and be like, okay, sure, and just start crying was the hardest part.
Did you guys? Because I really felt like as I was watching that scene, I think that Philip has some real love for Martha. I think he's got some real deep-seated affection.
I felt like he was straight lying.
You just thought he was full of it?
Mm-hmm.
I think that at this point in their lives, you know, like this whole morphing of, you know, when you're in the moment, is it real?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it becomes real. I don't know if it really matters if, you know, if the Philip at home, like Clark loves her, I think. You know what I mean?
I think
Clark loves her.
Clark cares for her. It's like it's kind of an old Yeller situation. Like it's the dog that you love, and at some point the dog goes rabid, and then
it's kind of like okay because I watched
in the backyard.
Yeah,
because I watched The Flash because I'm like old school DC fan, and I watched the original Flash with John Wesley Shipp back in the 90s.
Okay,
which was only on for like 5 episodes, but
like all 90s things that had the superheroes, they were all failures. Keep going.
No, they weren't. We'll talk about this after the podcast.
DC versus Marvel next week.
Anyways, no, but there is a moment in the recent episode, and if you are a Flash fan, if you haven't watched a recent episode, you should probably like turn away right now. But there's a moment where a character kills somebody that they love, and as they're doing it, they tell them, you know, I have grown to love you, and I do care about you, but you're getting in the way of my plan. And I can't have you get in the way of that. And they just kill him in cold blood. So I feel that that's more where Philip's coming from, where maybe he does have this kind of affection for Martha, and maybe he is saying the truth, where she really is, like, the nicest and most honest woman he's ever met. That's not going to stop him from doing his job. I don't think he's ever gotten close enough to Martha to actually feel that he would save her.
I have a prediction. Can we talk about predictions?
We're almost there. Let's.
I think it's just interesting, you know, because it's like Elizabeth gave this kid a pass, you know, today, mm-hmm. who meant nothing to her. You know, I don't know if it necessarily like is a thing where you let somebody live that fouls up your plans because you're in love with them, or maybe it's because you pity them, like the old Yeller thing. I don't know what it will be. I don't know how it will play out. You know, yeah. You can make your prediction afterward.
Oh, Yeller get shot.
I'm saying, but because, but is it pity or is it, you know, the love that gets in the way of, you know, whatever, doing the, you know, what your mission sure. is? Mm-hmm. I don't know that it matters. I think, you know, I do think for these characters, like, they have to convince themselves that they truly, deeply feel what they're showing on some level. Like, I think they have to get that deep. Mm. You know, when I say I think Clark loves her, like, I think you have to get at least that deep for somebody to believe you love them.
He's a complete psychopath, is
what
you're saying.
Absolutely.
Complete psychopath. Just, like, not even hesitation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
We saw in the flashbacks today Bakladov saying to Philip, "You are a monster." And that is something that stuck with me ever since that happened. Yeah. He's kind of a psychopath.
Yeah.
They both are. Yeah. It's impossible not to be.
Monster.
That type of job will... There are people who, from birth, tend to show, like, psychopathic tendencies, and there are people who are created and become psychopaths, and that kind of job will turn you into a psychopath.
Yeah,
you
sure.
have no choice but to do it, like, or you will go insane. You won't be able to do your job.
Philip
so,
and Elizabeth folded a body into a suitcase.
Yeah.
There's not even a question.
They cracked bones.
Yeah.
They watched a man get set on fire, like, that
day. But you gotta wonder, what is Philip's plan? Because he's obviously thought a lot about the possible ways this could unfold if he's got, like, a whole apartment set up for Martha to visit. He's gotta have something in mind for this contingency.
He's gotta be ready to kill her at any moment.
Maybe he's gotten a little
at any moment.
Kind of just, like, lazy with Martha. I think he probably has gotten a little lazy.
Sloppy.
And distracted with all the million other things happening in this show.
Yeah. On that note, shall we go ahead and wrap up, go into predictions?
Sure.
Let's do it.
Anyone else? Okay. So, Matt.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
Predictions. I think Paige is going to find out next week that something about them actually being spies, like something really concrete.
Yeah.
Paige is going to discover
next week.
Well, we saw that little clip from two episodes ago in the coming scenes.
I think that's going to happen, and I think she's not going to immediately run for the hills.
Mm.
I think she's going
to She's already become kind of convinced,
you
know?
Yeah, I think she may be on board with something.
Okay.
For three episodes now, we've been hearing Stan's friend died in Chicago. Stan's going to Chicago. Stan's got a trip planned in Chicago. Something is happening to Stan in Chicago. And I don't want to make, like, the vaguest prediction ever, but, like, he's got to run into an old friend from his backstory back in Chicago. Maybe he's going to, like, get sucked back into the white power movement or something. I don't know, but... But something's going to happen.
Hmm.
Something that might even keep him, like, out in Chicago for the rest of the season.
This is episode 8. We have 5 left. Either in episode 12 or 13, after an agonizing 3 to 4 episodes of build-up, where Philip is considering that he's going to have to kill Martha, and you keep having these tense moments, he will probably walk in to kill her, and she'll have killed herself, or she'll kill herself she's going to kill herself with that gun, and the reason I think so is because the actress referenced the statistic that 3 out of 4, so she's aware of that statistic, and the writers in this show tend to use a lot of historical accuracy in their writing, and I think that's what's going
to
happen.
I don't want you to be right, Ben, but that sure seems like a believable prediction to me.
Yeah, it does. Oy vey, there's so much that happened. I guess, I think I'll just go with Todd. I think that's going to come back and just blow up in their face, and I think it's
literally
gonna happen.
Bomb going off somewhere.
Through, he might, and not maybe a bomb, maybe not. Yeah. Maybe it might just be something where he gets a hold of Hans and kind of manipulates him or abuses him. I think Todd is probably more sadistic than he than they think he is. He might have just been coming off as innocent to protect himself in that situation.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I did like what you said this episode about Elizabeth's sort of slipping because of her emotional side is taking over a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of it's weird, but whenever that happens to Philip or Elizabeth,
mistakes
will happen. You can't really have a heart in that type of business. Sounds so cold, but I'm also the girl who was like, well, he was racist.
He was racist, you know?
put that tire around him.
Maybe I'm a psychopath. On that note, where can everyone find everyone?
Can I also just say, I feel like we were so smart as a group. I feel like this was a really smart discussion we had today. We
got very high really level
deep
stuff.
Yeah. We got deep today.
And then watch every commenter is going to be like, no, you guys are idiots.
There was a full-on like social commentary on like racial norms and things in our culture that like was a 12-minute tangent in the middle of the Americans After Show today.
I feel like you guys got educated out there.
Sorry.
So you're welcome.
It's just been really heavy, you guys.
And now you know Adrian's black.
And I am black.
Oh, by the way, I just want to say, in case you guys are confused,
all white males.
I'm white.
They're all white guys. I am the lead host. And
Josh
black
looks
woman.
Like he's an indeterminate descent.
I've been people. If I'm on a bus in LA and I don't open my mouth, people will start speaking Spanish to me.
Yeah. Race in America. Yeah. Hashtag race together,
that's
y'all.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Starbucks. Yeah. Anyways, where can everyone find
you? You can find me at MattRiddercomedy.com.
You could go to @RadioTFB on Twitter or also go to JoshRichmond.net for other goodies and such.
My name is Ben Bateman. You can find me on Ben Bateman Media, Twitter, and Instagram.
I'm Adrian Snow. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Adrian Snow. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will see you all next Wednesday.
Bye, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.